Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have one of my favorite guests on, somebody who I respect highly, and I'd love to get her take on things because there's just this raw kernel of truth, and it's a call to action every time she comes on. So I want to welcome Ms. Tessalena today to the show, and we're going to talk about something that maybe a lot of us don't know about, and that's the World Health Organization and their pandemic treaty. I've read about this, but it has not been put out in the media to any degree. And when it's like that, Tessa, I always feel like they're trying to hide something. So I wanted to thank you so much. I know how busy you are. You've been writing and you've been performing, I'd assume, as well. But there's an article that you wrote that I really think people need to know about. It's called What's the Deal with the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty? And people can find that on the expose. expose-news.com. So, Tessa, thank you so much for joining me. Let's get right into it. What exactly is the WHO's pandemic treaty?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I'm honored and joyful to be talking to you every time it happens. So thank you so much. The WHO, just a note, so it is one of those agencies at the United Nations that is not really accountable to anybody except for their donors, like for all practical purposes. So their formal accountability is nil. And we all know who the donors are. So, for example, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they are one of the top donors to the World Health Organization. There are great suspicions that for a number of years now, not just in 2020, but for a number of years, the World Health Organization has been kind of performing the, you know, political bureaucratic functions on behalf of the pharma industry and, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and previously tobacco industry, the nuclear industry. There's actually a great documentary about the World Health Organization called Trust Who, that was made before 2020, and it goes into corruption and conflict of interest and how who was covering up, like early on for the tobacco industry, big time, and then for the nuclear industry, where they were downplaying the dangers of nuclear disasters. Because, well, there's a great suspicion that Bill Gates, for example, is a big fan of nuclear, and so he's invested in that, and he said on record that it was one of his favorite investments, probably more favorite than healthcare. So the WHO was covering up, well, my interpretation, for investors like him to make sure that people don't have too many apprehensions about the nuclear. But now with this pandemic management, as we know, in the past 2 years, as we all have seen, suddenly all leaders of all leading countries, and actually in developing countries too, were kind of very strangely performing the same routine. And it seems like even though every country had their own pandemic preparedness plan, you know, good or bad, for whatever it's worth, it was sitting there. And there was a variety, but all of a sudden every country just dropped it and did the same exact thing, more or less, in 2020 and on. And lots of things that were not making any sense at all. So, as we know, social distancing, masks, vaccines, they all went through that same dance. And despite the complaints from the citizens, despite the fact that it was not helping, despite the fact that it was contradicting the science, they all did the same thing. So for all practical purposes, the World Health Organization is already controlling lots of the things that are happening, because it seems like the leaders, the elected representatives that are supposed to represent the interests of their people in each country, representing the pharma industry a lot more so. But now the World Health Organization is looking to formalize its influence. It seems like, again, for practical purposes, they kind of already have that, mm-hmm. and they're not accountable. And we are already in a situation that is not very good at all. and deviating a little bit. So do you remember how very early on in 2020, there was a particular session by the World Health Organization where they said, well, but the real danger is people in the households, and it might be necessary. I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember the exact quote, but I'm paraphrasing pretty close to how they actually said it. So it might be necessary to go into the households and isolate people from their households. And those of us who actually saw that and paid attention, we were all horrified. And we were like, oh, this is like, what are they saying? Are they going to actually isolate people, force isolate people from their households? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. Like even I saw it with my own eyes, but I wanted to believe it's just, you know, paranoid on my part to think anything because it's just too crazy. And well, fast forward to even last year when in some countries like Australia, they were actually force quarantining people, taking them out of their household. And well, of course, we all know like in China, it is a nightmare. But so the things that they said, as a hypothetical and really crazy sounding, it actually started happening. So in that light, having them as a controller of the future pandemic response on a formal level is a horrifying thought, even though they kind of already have the power without having it formally. So what is happening on the formal level, they are trying to do a power grab in two different formal ways. And I'm actually undecided as far as, because the laws have been broken so many times in the past 2 years, the national laws with all the emergencies. So it almost like it matters, but they are already acting brazenly. But what they're trying to do, there are two avenues, like I said. So one is they started drafting a new pandemic treaty, and they are actually deliberately extremely, extremely vague in their wording. So they're saying, well, like a new intergovernment body to deal with pandemic treaties, or maybe draft a new treaty to make sure that it's all nicely coordinated, and so that international forces, you know, different countries collaborate in case of the next pandemic. So we have this whole plan meet and an order and vaccines. And of course, there's a focus on vaccines, but they're extremely vague. And then when it comes down to what they were actually trying to implement, then it's essentially putting us all in under the boot of the pharmaceutical industry, because their definition of health is like vaccines, yeah, and equitable distribution of vaccines and all those measures that are, well, not so helpful. So they want to put themselves in charge of international pandemic response and make it formal. And there was one one round of public commentary in April. It was just 2 days for like video conferences, and they did not publicize it. And so it was very, very hush-hush. Mm-hmm. And those who were able to submit the video commentary, I mean, they were in communication with the WHO and related organizations. And it sounded like it was all about like surveillance, again, surveillance, vaccines, biosecurity state. And there is going to be another public commentary period in June. This June, it's going to be June 16 and 17, 2022. And I don't know. I mean, I want everybody to do everything they can. Like in my honest mind, I don't know if it kind of has been already decided, meaning that we can raise noise, but whether they're going to heed that's a big question. But again, we cannot just go belly up and do nothing. So it's important to be aware, and it's important to submit the commentary. And then there's another avenue that we can, I don't know whether we can actually do anything about it, but they, well, there was a set of amendments to the treaty that was submitted to the existing treaty that was submitted actually by the United States, by the Biden administration. And again, it can be interpreted relatively innocuously, like if you don't read between the lines, but it also can be interpreted as essentially canceling the sovereignty of the United States of America in case of a pandemic. So if the WHO announces an emergency, then it is possible to interpret it in a way that the desires of the WHO, the declarations by the World Health Organization actually override the laws of the United States. And I guess in reality, it depends on who chooses to do what. But I consider personally to be a very dangerous development, and the amendments were already submitted. They were submitted in January, and the voting on those amendments inside the WHO is going to happen on May 22nd. So that's a couple of days from now.
Well, Tessa, let's take our first break because I wanted to go to tease out what these amendments are. I've seen them or I've read it, and I just want to make sure people really get the gist of what they're trying to pull. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Tessa Lena. And prior to the break, Tessa, you did a wonderful job of giving us a breakdown of these two pathways that the WHO has taken. Before we get to what the United States amendments are, there's a couple of observations that I want to make about this whole WHO situation. One, that there's no physicians, MDs, practicing medicine in the real world running this. The head of the WHO is not a doctor. We know Bill Gates and his organization are not physicians either. And he's the number one, as far as I can remember, the number one donor to the WHO after the United States pulled the plug. So we have someone with something to gain. You know, who stands to gain from this? There's a conflict of interest to have these people who aren't physicians run something that can literally control what you and I do as individuals, our freedom, our ability to make a living. And I want to ask you a question. This is going to be later, but does this tie in at all with global warming? Because I read something that global warming is going to be considered a health issue. And if that's the case, I can only imagine how they can take a ball and run with it.
It's very interesting that you're bringing it up, because I believe actually that, assuming that the goal is this new, and I don't want to sound sensationalist, because sometimes people use a globalist order and then it's just like you imagine all sorts of crazy stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it is crazy in essence, but this word has been hijacked in a way. But that's what it is. The goal has been for a number of years, I believe, to establish that centralized control by, really the same old players, probably the heads of the wealthiest corporations, the richest people in this world, who have been, I don't know, like some people really like power, and that's what they still like. And the initial push as of recent was through climate emergency, before COVID, mm-hmm. Through climate emergency, and that was the way to scare people into submission. And I want to say that there's plenty of things that people do, really abusive things that people do to nature and to the environment. Like, as we know, and I think nobody argues that point, that there's plenty of pollution, like really horrible pollution, chemical, electromagnetic. And we are really making our home and our bodies, like we're endangering them. That's true. However, what those powers are trying to do, I don't think it has anything to do with saving everybody or, actually cleaning up nature. It has to do with using the existing fear of pollution, the existing fear for people's health, to actually push through their so-called green and sustainable economy that is neither green nor sustainable. It's actually pretty horrible. And in my opinion, it's worse than what we have now. What we have now is not good at all. It's actually very dirty. But what they're suggesting to do, they're calling it green, but it's only green in name. Because, windmills for miles and miles into the ocean. They're like really loud turbines that are going to deafen the sea animals, like because they use, the sea animals do use sound for communication. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really horrible for them. Mm-hmm. And then solar panels for miles that are laced with Teflon, that is obviously, it is extremely toxic. As we know, it's carcinogenic and it's really toxic and bad for health. And it leaches when it rains and the solar panels become old, it leaches into the ground, into the groundwater. So it's a horror, really, what they're trying to do. And with all the nano-sized dust and sensors. Mm-hmm. So anything they're selling to us under green and sustainable, and they, I mean, I guess it's the same investors like BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street. And so the mysterious they, but it's not green. They're not saving us. They're saying they're saving us, but they're doing the opposite. So they tried to do it with climate change, climate emergency, Greta Thunberg and all that. People did not get scared enough. So then there's 2020 and COVID and the horrible virus and great fear. And then they managed to scare people sufficiently. And now they want to use the tools for, like, the fear tools that people got trained to accept, many people, not everybody, of course, in the context of the pandemic, to apply that back to the climate emergency. So any minute now, I expect them to use words like vaccine for the planet. I don't know, for example, carbon spending, limit your carbon spending as a vaccine for the planet, or call people planet killers instead of climate killers if they, I don't know, if they want to drive a car that uses gasoline. And by the way, I'm no fan of oil extraction. I think it's horrible. I think we don't really have any better alternatives right now, but I would love to see them. But nonetheless, the people who are selling us so-called green and sustainable are lying. So several lies that exist at the same time. So when climate change, going back to your question, when climate change is reframed as a health emergency, that means that they're going to use the same biosecurity measures and the same pressure, the same language, the same fear-mongering and lockdowns and whatnot to, quote-unquote, save the planet because it's an emergency. Mm-hmm. So that's just psychological, psychological bullying.
You know, the whole thing, if you really take a step back and stop listening to the rhetoric, this whole thing could be solved very, I mean, if this is an emergency, let's say climate is an issue, there's nobody coming after the companies that create the problem. Let's look at, for example, the electric car industry. These lithium batteries are toxic when they die, and to destroy them is more toxic to the planet than actually running gas-driven cars. No one talks about that. I mean, it's all this marketing. But it's not real. And it's, as I can, you know, God made an abundance, you know, the earth is abundant. And this is all about rationing, creating lack, creating anxiety, manipulating the resources, and then saying that you don't have any. The baby formula comes to mind right now. They shut down the baby formula plants, just like they're shutting down the farmers with the fertilizer and all these things to create this situation where we're all in chaos. But nobody can actually see that. We're about to buy oil from Venezuela when we are oil independent, technically. So, I mean, this is the same playbook, isn't it? It's not like it's different. It just keep using the same playbook with the media as the cloak for it. Keep saying the same thing, and hopefully people will just go along with it. But it, I mean, when do we, I mean, first of all, what's your take on what I said? I think it's manufactured in a sense. And it's marketed in a way to make people just shut up and take it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is, well, it is dishonest. And I think they're using, I mean, almost literally a form of hypnosis to make people go along. So there was so much fear mongering, well, especially in 2020, but also on, that it shut down people's ability to think. And so many measures that they were able to push through effectively. If you told anybody in 2019 that that was going to be the case, people would laugh. They would legitimately say it's crazy, it's unacceptable, it's impossible. But because how they manipulated people's psyche, people have accepted a lot of things. And by the way, just to comment on amendments, specifically amendments that were submitted by the United States, just to give it some context. The international health regulations that existed before the amendments in the context of the WHO, they actually already had provisions that would, in case of an emergency, override the United States law. So that was pre-existing. And in 2005, actually during Bush, they revised the pandemic preparedness plan in the United States, kind of behind the scenes. And that makes me think about long-term planning, because who was thinking about that in 2005? Nobody. Who was paying attention to it in 2005? Nobody. And it didn't really impact our lives for 15 years until 2020. And certain things like social distancing, I mean, they were all kind of weaved in the documents that were prepared during Bush. And yet we didn't hear about it until 2020. So, but the amendments actually just make it worse. They make the already bad situation and the ability of the international health regulations to override the United States legislation, they just make it harsher and easier to do. And again, the voting is going to start on May 22. And I personally don't know why they wouldn't vote yes, because it's a well-oiled machine. But I think that even so, it is extremely, extremely, extremely important to talk about it and scream about it and just see what sticks. And I would want also to send people to Steve Kirsch's Substack, because he detailed where people can go, and I'll probably publish that as well, just so that there's more impact. But specific websites and forms that people can fill out. And again, it's anybody's guess whether it's going to actually make any difference. We don't know, but we cannot just go belly up.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, we have to have our voices heard. And we're going to take our second break, but I wanted to talk about the structure of this, because it seems to be another version of another template where there's these unelected bureaucratic group that's making decisions for everybody. So let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Tessa Lena, and you can go to her website, tessafightsrobots.com. You can read about her, get her music, and read some of the blogs that she's written. Now, Tessa, do you also write now for exposenews.com as well?
They published that. They sometimes republish what I publish for Dr. Mercola.
Okay.
So this is the route we got to the expose.
So if you're gonna,
I actually didn't know. It was funny because people were sending me things, and I'm like, oh, that's my article.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, so Dr. Mercola is the second website that people can read your stuff directly without people reposting. Correct.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Now, before the break, we were talking about this group. I mean, I think it's international. It's lockstep. I mean, the Rockefeller group wrote something called the lockstep, and how they can get people and countries all in line to do what they want, whether that's medically driven or whatever. This seems to be an offshoot or part of that. I mean, maybe this was a test run, quite frankly, because you see every country shutting down, having the same rhetoric. This is not by accident. There's no way that all these countries can do the same thing when it didn't even necessarily apply to them. You know, something's up with this. And it went, if you really want to think about it, pretty smoothly, if you really think about it, the way this was a domino approach to it, everybody just went down the wayside. Now, before the break, you talked about how the United States put in amendments And I want people to understand this amendment means that the WHO can say to any country, you're in a pandemic, we deem this so, and we're taking over. You don't get to vote on this, am I correct? They just say that it is what it is, and you have to just shut down, or people put people in quarantine camps, or whatever they determine you should do. Am I correct?
In part, it's actually worse than that.
Worse?
The amendments make that mechanism easier. That mechanism was already in the previous World Health Organization documentation. So it was already the case that formally they could override the United States legislation. They already could do that. Mm. But the amendments just make it smoother and easier to do that. And again, that is just one route. Then another route, and that is the one that the commentary is going to be in June, is the introduction of the international negotiating body. And that, I mean, they're just trying everything. Intergovernmental negotiating body. And that is another mechanism where, through establishing this body, which they kind of already established, they're just very vague about it, they can also accomplish the same goal. It's just covering their legal bases from different sides. So if this doesn't work, then that works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even, like, it's hard to say one could be destruction or not. So we are dealing with essentially a mob in this case. And even though those amendments are horrible, again, but they're just making already horrible thing more horrible, because that ability to override our laws is already in place. So, like, honestly, being horrified is the most adequate reaction, I think. Well, and also making noise.
The article that you wrote gives a bullet point of a doctor who sat in on the call with the WHO. And I want people to really, I want to go over each bullet, because when you say horrified, I don't think people can understand the gravity, because our minds don't work this way. So let's go over these, because it's not a joke. The first bullet says that it calls for human security to be human security centric, not just health security centric. What the hell does that mean? I mean, you're right, vague, and it's euphemisms out of control. But what's your take on that?
Well, that means that they can equate, well, my understanding anyway, that they can equate anything that they deem necessary or worthy with the same gravity as human health. So, for example, they say climate change is a health emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And so then as a result, they can, and I'm saying I'm making it up, although not out of thin air, but let's say at this moment, hypothetically speaking, they can say, okay, so your carbon spending is too high and that's bad for the planet. And what's bad for the planet is a health emergency. It's like a health concern.
Mm-hmm.
So you should not be spending more than, I don't know, this amount of money a month on meat or milk, or you should stop eating meat because it's bad for the planet and it's a health emergency. So it's actually just giving this linguistic bridge to make any topic they want sound really urgent and have this public safety ring to it.
Right.
And then with public safety, as you know, well, I mean, it's 9/11, right, in the United States, where all of a sudden everything has, they really manipulated that situation. Now, well, I mean, it was a horrible, obviously, it was a big tragedy, but then on top of that, there was a Patriot Act and an invasion and war, and
yeah,
we all started taking off the shoes at the airport, and people got trained to, you know, answer to TSA agents like they are the bosses.
Yeah. And the pat downs, and yeah, it's a security state. And I want to segue that, because the CDC has recently put out rhetoric that having a handgun legally is a health issue, right? So imagine if that morphs into a human security centric issue, because people are trying to defend themselves. Can you see that also being lumped in and people getting their houses searched or, you know, going through the roles of who has a legal weapon and, you know, targeting them in some way?
Well, I think that their goals are very ambitious. Like what they're going to try to actually do, I mean, what they can in the end get away with is a big question. Because I think at some point people will push back when it becomes really, really ridiculous. Although it has gotten pretty ridiculous already. But they're just creating this completely open-ended linguistic bridge where, again, because it's kind of natural for people to feel that, like, health emergency, you know, big deal, and we have to protect people close to us. I mean, that's a good emotion, right?
Yeah.
If there's a genuine, like, horrible health emergency, and of course we have to be nice to our neighbors and do what makes sense and be good citizens. That's kind of an instinct,
yeah.
A good instinct. So if they latch other things to this instinct and then turn it into a harsh marching law, and I said marching, I mean martial law also, but I didn't mean marching, so everybody's marching to the same drum. And then they can essentially, well, after one generation, they can train people to think that in a normal way. Like, I see a lot of kids, and, well, I would say, like, high school age, younger, maybe a little bit older, like college. On their goodwill, they're walking in masks in the summer, in the street.
Yeah.
Some of them are. Why? It's actually bad for them. It doesn't save them from any virus, I don't think. But because they're young and malleable and they do want to do good, like kids do, it's normal for a kid, you know, to really believe what the adults say. And so they do. And so now we have this generation that thinks it's normal and even noble to wear masks for whatever, for coronavirus. And after one generation, with this psychological training, probably the hope is that we have the entirely new breed of human beings who don't even remember any natural things. Like we already forgot many natural things comparing to generations before us, but that's a new level. And when they have this new breed of citizens who know to believe the television or whatever it is at that point, I don't know, brain implant, they can do whatever they want. I think that's the ambition. Now, whether it's going to happen or not is a big question. I mean, I keep praying that it all falls apart, but that's what they're trying to do. And then use the dangerous, the biosecurity rhetoric, the wartime mentality, the wartime legal thinking, and apply it to everything across the board.
But never stops. I mean, this is a perfect example of the last couple of years. If you just stay home, it'll go away. You know, what is it? Stay home to flatten the curve. That was the initial. Then that stopped. That just kept going.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was one shot. Then it was two. I think Israel's on shot number 5. And it just never stops. And now there's variant upon variant. And now you have to give up more. No matter what you do to acquiesce and to help your neighbor, it's never enough. And, you know, we're going to take our break in a second, but I want to start off this next segment with who stands to gain? The next bullet is fast approval of emergency diagnostics and unified regulatory registration for diagnostics. And vaccines should be developed within 100 days. There's no vaccine that's been on the market that's been tested and proven to be relatively safe that's had less than 10 years or so to be tested. So they're going to do this thing in 100 days. I mean, so we're in a position where you can put out whatever you want as a company, as long as it's under the emergency umbrella, no regulation, it just gets fast-tracked. And then whatever happens, happens after the fact, right? To the person, to society. It just seems like there's a huge windfall of money because it never stops. It will be the next iteration and the next drug and the next vaccine. When does it stop?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Well, I mean, they're essentially destroying the standards. It sounds like people are completely disposable now. And I have to say that people have been more or less disposable for a while. But there was some barrier to that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to destroy that barrier so that, I mean, we're just disposable, right? I mean, so they gather all their money and they surveil and they do it under the guise of tracking for pandemic preparedness. And then they say maybe that implants are needed to track the emerging pandemics in real time. And that's again, public emergency or public security, public safety issue. So no conversation is allowed. And that's quite frankly horrible. I just hope that this house of cards falls under its own weight because it is so ridiculous.
I absolutely agree with you. And on that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. You know, Tessa, you were talking about them using whatever under the umbrella of it's a pandemic to get whatever they want. I want to go further from a medical standpoint. They now are, and I think they already do, have medication pills that they can track whether or not the patient has actually taken the medication. So there are sensors within it that can let the doctor, whomever's monitoring the patient, know that they actually took it. So this is not only about control about the outside of you, but also what's going on the inside. And with that type of grid, how can anybody be an individual and have a sense of autonomy? It's just, it's next level, frankly. And where's the body, the person's ability to be self-reliant, self-sufficient, to have responsibility for their choices? I don't want to be treated like an infant. I don't want someone to tell me what to do and what's best for me. How can they tell us that? And how can people make that transition between I'm responsible for myself and I want to take responsibility versus the government and the powers that are over us right now trying to manipulate and control everything?
I mean, I agree with your evaluation. I think that is what it is. And I think it's almost like the true teeth of the system of domination in the terminology of my friend Stephen Newcomb, who's a native philosopher. And I come back to his phrase, the system of domination, because I think that's what it is. And I honestly think that we have been living under this system for a while and for centuries, probably in different ways. But we in the Western world have been shielded from the ugly sides of it, say between World War II and 9/11, where there was actual prosperity and people could, you know, work a simple job and buy a house and live well, actually. Like a lot of people in the West could do that, especially in America. Of course, it came at the expense of wars and stealing oil and resources from other places in the world, but people here did not really see that. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of like, I don't want to use the word karma because I don't really believe in like revenge and loveless punishment. I don't think that's how life works. I mean, that's my own feeling about it. I think life is kind, but it's kind of like what the Western countries were doing to many other places in the world and robbing Africa and the Middle East and so many places and creating war and suffering and orphans and, you know, death. So that is coming back to where people can now see that. And it's the same system. And it's cruel. And it was not right before. And it is not right now. So, but it's kind of like almost the way I see it, it's an opportunity to see the ugliness of the entire thing mm-hmm. on the existential spiritual level. And my theory, my philosophical theory is that I think we have a good chance of pushing back successfully if we, well, unite from the heart. I don't mean the fake kumbaya, that's worthless. But kind of like understand that throughout history, all those injustices that were happening, they were actually crimes against free people. And the colonization, all those things, they're not bad because social justice warriors says they're bad. They're bad because they're existentially wrong. They're abuses of free people. And anybody who's a free person, everybody is a free person. Everybody's born free. Everybody is entitled to being a free person. So I think when people from different creeds and different ideologies and political affiliations start saying that thing in a similar way, as in it was bad 100 years ago, it was bad 500 years ago, it was bad 1,000 years ago, it is bad now. And it's less important existentially which demographic is getting hit than the fact that a human being is getting hit. Mm-hmm. And I think when people feel that, if people feel united, and if people, I don't know, they just start respecting each other's ancestors and mourn the tragedies that happened to all of our ancestors in the past due to the same fault in different parts of the planet with different political circumstance, but in the name of the same monster, monster of domination. And when people really feel that and really, I don't know, cry out for the to the skies for healing and to understand how we get out of it, to understand what we can do. Because human beings, like, it's hard for us to really know the big picture. It's impossible. We are babies. I mean, we're beautiful babies, but we're babies. Mm-hmm. So if we pray for the clarity, for what we do, how we resolve all this, how we heal, how we go forward together in love, I think that's when the entire monster is defeated. I think that is when we stop getting great resets.
I think that's just beautifully said. And part of it is we've been so fractionated, hyphenated, you know, and made very cleverly to see each other as the enemy and fight each other. And I think you made a really just a subtle but important statement. It's not about revenge, because this whole social justice movement and that word equitable, I cringe, because it's not about equity. It's about being able to pit people against each other so that nothing changes, so that the status quo, in my opinion, stays the same. And if you really are one of the groups, and everybody's been a victim historically at some point, does it make it right to do it to somebody else if it happened to you? That, to me, is one of the hallmarks of this isn't real. This isn't something that I want to be a part of. And just to go back to the article, that bullet point about equitable access to vaccines, that's a stick, because it's going to be a mechanism. They have a mechanism to hold violators accountable. What does that even mean? And you describe it. So if a nation concludes, for example, the vaccine isn't safe and the WHO deems that it is, they can override the country and, you know, give that vaccination or whatever the treatment is to that population anyway. To me, that is the ultimate betrayal of sovereignty and safety and humanity. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to add to what you said. This whole equitable distribution of vaccines, I think, really is a euphemism for more colonialism, because they're going to, the so-called, I don't like the term, but, you know, it's a term, developing world. Mm-hmm. It's a vast market, right? And I know, I mean, like, I talk to people from different places in the world, and obviously everybody's different and every culture is different, but there's not so much enthusiasm about those vaccines in many places of the world. So they have a low vaccination rate against COVID because people, frankly, don't want it. They don't trust it. They don't care. They don't want it. But if it is framed as, oh, well, they deserve access. So the equitable access means that the WHO and the manufacturers are going to push it onto people in Africa and to people in India. And I mean, like, that's just treachery.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Pure treachery.
But it's all about language, isn't it? Doesn't it always come back to that? Equitable diversity. I mean, what else? These buzzwords that are used, and they actually mean the opposite. They don't care about anything except holding power. And to me, it's always been about control and follow the money. And this is making it codified while they use the pretense of wanting to help people. I'm going to help you by putting you away.
That's
somewhere.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, when are we going to, as people, we all want the same thing. It really comes down to being able to be free to pursue your God-given talents without hurting other people and live your life. I mean, these people don't want that. They just want control over every living creature. And it's not just humans anymore. It's animals. It's the plant kingdom. It's everything. And we need to wake up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is where we are. And I think to bring it back to the practical, with the disclaimer that I have no idea what effect our noise is going to make as far as those amendments and also that new intergovernmental negotiating body, but we got to make noise. And I want to send people to websites and substacks of people who are actually very actively involved in the level of activism on this issue. So there's this group called World Council for Help. And Tess Lowry is one of the doctors involved in there. So if you just go to World Council for Health, they have a campaign to try to push back against that. And then again, Steve Kirsch wrote extensively. He wrote several posts specifically on the practical measures that people can take, you know, for whatever they work. I don't know where they're going to work, but it's important to do that so that it's not just philosophy. Like, philosophy is my favorite genre, but people need to make noise.
Well, I thank you for giving us that information. And it's World Council for Health .org. I think that's the website.
Yeah, just click on the World Council for Health .org.
And, you know, we have just a few minutes left. Where else can people, I want them to be able to read what you write and to support you. So where should they find your information?
I currently mostly write on Substack, Tessa Fights Robots, and the Substack URL is Tessa, TESSA.substack.com. Or if they Google Tessa Fights Robots, they will be able to find me.
Tessa, I want to thank you so much for what you've done by putting this out there in a way that people can just see it all in just in one place. Because I think there's seems to be a really concerted effort to hide it and to give you this very pablum version so you just ignore it. And then it's going to be sprung on us after the fact. It's very disheartening that that the powers that be in our own governments, whatever country you're in, are not working in the interests of the people. And I think you're absolutely right. If we don't take care of business, then we have really, we don't know what's going to happen, but standing down is not going to be in our interest. I totally agree with you with that.
Exactly.
You know, time goes so quickly. I love having you on. You know that you have a standing invitation to come back anytime you want. I want to thank you for everything you do, and God bless you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always such a joy to be on your show. And I come on anytime you want.
Well, thank
you. Tomorrow.
Thank you. Well, anything I can do to help, you just have to ask. And I want to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.